Hey, this episode is brought to you by ProBalls.com. ProBalls.com is a statistical platform that features over 70 leagues around the world. Most recently, also college teams were added to this platform. And if you consider yourself a statistical nerd or a statistical geek, this is the place to be, to explore all sorts of statistics, profiles, and other goodies that interest you. Today, Lassie and me explored the search engine. And if you want to know what we searched for, please check out this episode. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to my podcast. And today's guest is Lassi Tuovi. Lassi is the head coach of Finland basketball, as well as the assistant coach for Virtus Bologna. And today we talked a lot about his path with the national team, transitioning from assistant coach to head coach, and the mentorship he received from Coach Detman along the way. That shaped him who he is today, and he's still learning. We talked a lot about his philosophy in terms of learning and still educating himself by asking players questions. He doesn't necessarily think this is his truth, but this is the experience he had, and he's still learning. He's still educating himself, and he just kind of shares his perception and view on things of how it helped him to shape him as a coach. I hope you enjoyed this episode. There's a lot of nuggets in there in terms of mentorship, philosophy, learning, X's and O's. If you did so, please share. Please give it a thumbs up. Please subscribe to this podcast on YouTube as well as on all the audio platforms, and hope to see you soon. Thanks a lot. Bye. Lassi, my friend, how are you?
Very good, Benas. How are you doing? Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you for coming on. We've been going back and forth, but we finally got it done. And I'm glad you. We've known each other for quite a while now, so I'm glad that this finally came to fruition.
Yeah, it's been a while. You know, I'm considering myself still as a very young coach. So one good lesson I learned already is that you better rather listen than talk. So that's why I've been rather listening to your podcast, and but hopefully with this talk, if I can give some tips or advices or something for the young coaches, you know, definitely worth it.
Yeah, this is going to be a special podcast, because there's one topic that I always wanted to talk to you and to talk to you in front of the listeners or with people understanding the significance of it, is mentorship. And before we dive into it, I have one simple question for you to start off the day and to start the conversation, because I will introduce my podcast today. It's a little bit more, it's more on the creative side. It's not the typical four quarters that I usually prepare. So I hope that the listeners will get the drift, and it's going to be a little bit different in terms of topic discussion. But I wanted just to start off asking you a simple question. How are you, just as a person? As a coach is one thing, but as a person, how are you today? Like at this time, in this moment of your career, of your life, how you feel?
Well, I believe and I hope that I'm still feeling the same as I felt 15 years ago when I really jumped into the coaching. Super excited, humble to learn, and also I understand that, you know, basketball is something which gives us a lot. It became a, you know, profession, and it took me to the several amazing places, cities, clubs, been living abroad. But how am I? I think I'm still hopefully the same young kid who's super excited to learn basketball, learn life, and enjoy basketball.
It's always the comparison between life and coaching in whatever sphere it is, whether it's basketball or football. I like the metaphorical parts of it, because you can learn in life and apply it in coaching or in your profession very easily if you are cognizant and a little bit more reflective. And I think that today we're going to have a lot of things that we can apply to for all the listeners and people watching on YouTube, the things that you learned along the journey, you know, to apply that you're doing every day, basically for in two jobs for 12 years now, 13 years, right? So we're gonna unwrap all of this. The first thing I wanted to start with was how did you become a coach? Like, how did you, you were born in Finland in Lappeenranta. How do you pronounce it? Lappeenranta?
You do it very well.
I have some Finnish in me. And I was wondering, how did you find basketball in the first place in such a remote area of Finland?
Kind of accidentally. I didn't play basketball a long time when I was so young. I started it at the age of 15. Before that, I played soccer. And I actually, you know, spent a lot of time in a theater because my father is a theater director back in the days. And I jumped into the basketball very young age. I was lucky because the club was suddenly one of the best ones in Finland, you know. But there was not a, you know, good youth program. So actually, you know, I got into the men's summer practice in the pro team. I was a terrible player. Honestly, this I can tell you that, you know, there was not a talent, maybe a great will and hardworking mentality, but that I was just there around and because there was not a lot of kids who played basketball. So we were just, you know, basically rebounding in the practice summertime and I injured. I hurt my knee and I was out one season. There was not a lot of people working for the team neither. So there was only, you know, the coach, and it was a small club. He had a lot of duties. So he told me to help him watching the other teams and doing some help, like kind of like young kid there. And I fell in love with that. Long story short, we won the championship 2005. So I was 18 years old. And next summer, the guy told me that maybe you should be focused on helping management and coaching stuff more than on the floor, and I didn't even think about it. I jumped into it, and 50 years later, I'm here.
It's a classical story. Wanting to be a player, getting injured, and then going into the coaching, and everything unravels from there. Did the theater help you in coaching? Did the theater experience help you somehow in some way?
Now, this I've spoke a lot. Of course, there's a lot of similarities, like leadership wise. Giving a simple example, thinking about the roles, casting is everything. And if you put or give a too big role for an actor who's not able to handle it, the show will not be very good. And the meanwhile, if you have too many stars and minor roles, it will not click in the stage as it will not click on the floor. So these kind of things you learn. And of course, another thing which I think we underestimate is that basketball for me is it's an art. We think about it, we can control it. We have a way to try to control it, but it's not a science, it's an art. So you need to give just the actors, the stars, the space to be themselves, and that's the similarity I found very important in any level in sports.
I 100% agree with you on that, because it's an art form that you give the paintbrush to the players. And you kind of just kind of on the blank canvas, and you let them navigate the space, and hopefully you recognize as a coach the strengths and the weaknesses to help them navigate the waters a little bit and put them in position to succeed. But that's the creativity part, that whichever team you go on to, there's a different way of achieving that success.
Exactly. And then we need to control different persons different way. There's those artists who you need to give more freedom, and without it they cannot be successful, they cannot be themselves. On the meanwhile, there's always people around who needs exactly the right rules, that they know what you expect from them, what is the duty and what is the work that they need to bring into the group, so they can be motivated and they can be satisfied. Because if they don't know, if you don't tell and organize it right way, those people are lost. Same way as the more creative ones, if you control them too much.
Yeah, and I think that's the challenge of when those two parties have to play together. You know, one has the freedom and the liberty, the artist in him has the ability and the talent to do so, and the less talented or the ones that need more control, they have to kind of find a way to play with the artist, you know, and kind of be like on stage in theater or in ballet, where there's the main ballet dancer and there's other dancers around him that have to be that all has to be coordinated.
That's the thing. I think it's one of the reasons why I think that it's an endless learning in this job, and when I became an assistant coach again a few months ago, I think this is the one of the main thing to learn with the more experienced coaches and a high level organization in Bologna, that this is the key. You need to have a basically same rules for the team, and same time give this little freedom and little specific roles for each and everyone according what you expect from them. But you know, you need to ask more from the ones you can ask more. That's actually caring. Yes. That the standards are higher, and that's also super important in our job to show that they might have in some situation bigger role, I would not say freedom, but like able to be more creative. But on the same time, we ask a lot more from them because they have the capacity to give you more.
Yeah, so there is a double standard. There shouldn't be a double standard in certain situations, whether it's hustle or just the defensive plays that you require effort. But on the other side, the offensive, there is a double standard because of the responsibilities you give to those players, and they have to produce more because of that.
Yeah, that's at the end, talking about motivation, this is the key thing that at the end, whatever is your role, somebody gonna have a more shots, somebody gonna have a more ball in his hands or her hands. But at the end, you need to share sacrifices, and you need to work together. That's why we play team sports. Otherwise, we should jump into the individual sports.
Yes, exactly. Tennis players, like Messina likes to say, they're some of them are tennis players. but I broke up our podcast in different segments, I call them, and that's more metaphorically speaking. The first one is going to be pregame. The second one is going to be transition offense. Then half court. Then we go into a quick halftime with ProBallers.com. Then I'm going to incorporate a little bit of a box score analysis with you. Then we go into transition defense, and then a post game analysis. So all those things incorporate different parts of your career, but also some parts that can be applied for individuals or for coaches that are listening. That you learned along your career. You already mentioned the transition from head coach to assistant coach again, but we're going to go, that's going to be in the next segment. Let's start with the pregame quickly. When you came to the national team in 2010, I believe, and you just said it, you started 2005 and then until 2010. When you came to the national team, there's different stories of how people got to where, but I'm more interested in how did you feel stepping on the floor with national team players, with the national team, with high-level players that play all over Europe or the world? And did you feel ready? Was there some sort of insecurity that you felt during that? What did you feel in the first summer with the national team when you came as a young coach?
Honestly, it was kind of a foggy summer because there was so many new things, and of course as a young coach, or I don't know, I was video coordinator at that time, you feel super excited. And the key was what I remember, that the atmosphere they built over there was special, that you felt automatically in the team during the dinners in the hotels that you are part of it. And for sure, we're going to talk a lot about leadership of Henrik Detman over there. But me as a young coach, I think for somehow he motivated, pushed me to be myself, to propose and to do stuff like with the videos and try sometimes probably too much, and then you have to control that there's too much ideas or something, but you automatically felt that I can be. And that was the thing that I remember, that somebody might think that you are just standing on the side and basically saying buongiorno in the morning and au revoir when you leave. But more, I felt immediately that you can be yourself. And now, afterwards, this is the main thing I think I want to keep up with the Susi Jengi right now when I'm a head coach already, 14, 13 years later.
So do you feel responsibility, the same responsibility that was passed on to you now for the next generation of coaches in Finland?
I felt already that, he wanted to explore us. He wanted to push us to try to not be just giving the tactical board or rebounding the basketball. We shared a lot of ideas. We were participating. And that's one of the things I think we have been overall doing in the youth coaching, in the national teams, in the clubs. That's some kind of a DNA we have right now in our coaching culture in Finnish basketball. And we need to be very proud of it. It's not that you write it down in the book and give it to everybody, read it and do it. I think it's something that you lead from the top. So when you see that people are doing it, kind of a drop it to the other people, to the other coaching staffs, and I'm very proud to be now leading Susi Jengi, but even more proud to be one of the Finnish coaches, because it's been great to see how it grew up during the years.
So I'm gonna take the one part of the half court subjects that I prepared into this pregame, because this is important, this that we are on the subject already with Coach Detman, of how the mentorship affected you, because the timeouts that he gave to you and the ownership you felt in the timeouts, how long did it take from 2010 to when he actually gave you the boards during the games, or during practices is one thing, but during the games to draw up a play or to draw up certain things that he felt comfortable that you could give to the team, that he trusted you, and there has to be some sort of cohesive unit amongst the coaching staff. Trust has to be built throughout the summers, and throughout one summer it's kind of hard, but throughout the summers, that there is Coach Detman was very cognizant of that he's grooming the next generation of coaches, and particularly you, that he gave you the trust and the power to do so in the timeouts during games. So when did he give it to you, and how did you feel prepared for those situations? What obviously had a big impact on you feeling free and confident enough to do so?
Of course, that was probably a bigger thing than it was, because people start to talk about it and recognize that assistant coach is throwing the play in the timeout. Honestly, everything was well prepared. We never used anything pulling a rabbit in a hat, type of a things. We were more preparing the things in the practice. We had a plan, and always in the huddle we talked at what we're going to do. And the head coach always decided and decides the call, who's going to pass, who we have on the floor, what do we need. And then we had a certain package. It was just more to maybe push somebody else to do one duty during the timeout, because this is something I also learned. Timeouts, and especially the end of the games, they are super, you are stressed, hectic. And I give you an example. When you are going to the timeout in a crucial time, if you are just watching your board and yelling, drawing 60 seconds of one play, you might miss a very important information, or you might not give an opportunity for the player to ask a question. We know that every team has the player who's opened the mouth and will ask the smart or sometimes even a stupid question, and there's the players who start to immediately talk. But most of the players are in this situation waiting that they have an opportunity. So if you're only watching your board, if you're only throwing and yelling, there might be, missing information. And Henrik was very smart that during the timeout, when somebody else draw the play, he might even recognize that somebody's tired or somebody had, you know, a face that he wanted to ask something, so he had an opportunity to talk. Same thing in the games. If the head coach is the one who needs to give the player offensive play call, defensive strategy, your defensive matchup, how can you run the coaching during the last minutes of the ball game? So you need to share responsibilities. This was just one way to give assistant this role to draw the play, so Henrik has a more time and focus to give a time for some other duties.
It's very interesting. That's one thing that I take from that is that he did it with the awareness of having a different angle on the team. You know, he would watch you, or he would give you the timeouts, but then he would watch the whole energy in the huddle probably, and to see and observe from the outside with a different angle to see maybe that could impact his decision making during the game or the next place onward.
I totally agree, and I recognize it. Like that time, of course, I was super excited to go and throw and focus on that. But when I did it afterwards, give you example, I used a lot my assistant last summer to go and give a short information about defense before we call the next play in the timeout. So many times the one of the assistant had a, you know, this 20-30 seconds to go through that next defense, we're going to change a little bit, or we need to focus on him, or now they're going to probably draw this ATO. Same time when I was watching the team, you recognize some things that you were not able to recognize during the game. So even this half timeout, 30 seconds, gives you, as you said, a totally different angle, and everybody does their own way and what is the best for themselves. But I think that this is super interesting because you get a lot of different, as you said, angles and views for this important moment.
And feel, because I think for coaching, intuition and just you know, the internal voice is going to tell you what you really feel and what the right decision will be, and then you have to go for it. And a lot of times I think coaches try to calculate a little bit too much instead of listening to their intuition, and those kind of angles that you can see from the outside, kind of like a helicopter view from above, it gives you a little bit of a different perception of the information that you receive, and you can make a different decision. I think that put yourself out of the bubble for a short bit, and then take the information as a whole, and then the decision making can come in a slightly different angle.
You're totally right. I also think that this sometimes we as coaches, we have this flow in the game that basically the timeout starts and we just, you know, grab the board and we are already sitting in the chair before the players are coming. And it also works, because I think this flow is super important. Sometimes you have the feeling for the game and you know exactly how we want to, you know, do the next few minutes. So you need to use this energy. On the meanwhile, I remember so many timeouts that I'm sitting there in the chair without any idea, just going through emotions. And those are important moments that as I started today, it's very important that you listen. First, there might be some super important information. This works everywhere in coaching. I usually tell that, you know, that's one of the main things how I try to run my staff, and I hope that I can get even better on it, but anybody can have a good idea. Of course, in ATO, you cannot ask it from the guy who's cleaning the floor, but you know, in a life, that you never know that where the right idea and the good point comes. And that's why you need to listen.
Yeah, that's one thing that I can share a story here. When I was in with CSKA and Coach Messina was there, and we had a game in Riga at that time in the VTB league. And you know, it was a Lithuanian coach Butotas, who was coaching Riga. And I felt like I watched so many of his games, and I knew what he was going to do at the end of the game, because we had a close game. It was a one possession game, and they had a after timeout on the sidelines, on the sideline inbounding the ball. And I told coach in the coaches huddle before we got to the players that I'm pretty sure what he's going to do, because he always does this at the end of the game. If it's close, that's the one play that he runs that he really, and I was, you know, you can never be 100% sure, but I was fairly sure that he's going to do it. And I say that, and Coach Messina just says, okay, here's the board, draw it up for the players. I almost crapped in my pants when he gave me the board. I was like, holy shit, I did not expect that. So I went to the huddle, and that was more of a shock to the system. You know, contrary to what Coach Detman was, you know, you guys were preparing the ATOs, and everybody kind of knew when what will happen or when somebody will do the timeout. And this one kind of the spur of the moment, you know, shock to the system for me, where it just threw me in the cold water. And then I wrote it up. I showed which players are supposed to receive the ball. You don't know the matchup. You know the matchups, but you don't know who's going to run the play, who the play is going to be for. And you kind of we helped to Sonny almost got the steal because he was prepared for the flare screen, and it was a happy ending at the end of the day. But that was something similar. It's just that it was a little bit more shocking and unpreparedness of my that, like, you have to also prepare your wording, you know, as a coach. You have to know how the sentences are supposed to come out. I don't know if it was pretty or not, but it was definitely, I mean, it worked at the end.
Yeah, and that's a great example. Same time, like that's why we need to have we need to have a different kind of a personalities and different kind of a strengths in the team, but in the staff. Yeah. Because in these moments, sometimes you need this analytical thing that remember that we have been doing this, or they have been shootings, that somebody who's, you know, giving you the right things. Some moments you need an opinion that, no, let's do this. Let's stop. Straight kind of a communication. And that's also a thing I learned, that during the time when I was assistant, we had a different kind of a persons around. So coach had a bigger tool bag what to use. And if everybody are same, thinking the same way, doing the same things every day, you know, the maximum of your potential doesn't get any bigger.
So that, like, just to move on that, but because you said a couple of days ago when we talked of, you know, I'm still thinking about the pregame part of how to prepare for those situations that you're talking about, you know, the ATOs and having different strengths. But when you are focusing on your strengths in the preparation process, you said that you're doing one thing at a time. And that's why sometimes you can be hard to reach in terms of putting the phone away and preparing yourself for practice, for games, for whatever, for the road trip, for whatever you are preparing for at that moment. What is your routine like? Because there's different techniques, and people are looking to be more effective in their techniques, because there's so much out there. Just, it's a lot in terms of information, in terms of responsibilities, then balancing family life with work, and just so many things that can crumble on top of you. How do you work your routine when you focus on one thing at a time? Because there is a Pomodoro technique that kind of reminds me of it a little bit, what you were saying, where you work for 2 hours, let's say, uninterrupted work, then you take a 30-minute break, then you work for an hour and a half, then you take a little bit of a shorter break, and so on. And you kind of peel the tomato or whatever. But what's your technique like that you're telling me on the phone the other day, that you try to do one thing at a time and put the rest aside?
Well, I think this is super important in our job, that you find your own way of working, as well as you know how you recover, because we don't have a time to recover. This is a washing machine right now with EuroLeague and national team coaching, where you don't have a day off, so you don't have a mornings to skip the alarm. You need to find your own way of working, and nobody cannot actually tell you that. You're right. I really like the thing that I work, focus, I wake up. Usually we work a lot in the morning, so it's very hectic. And then you suddenly stop it. I'm not type of a person who works in one part during the day and work so long that I finish my job and then I rest. I prefer that when we are done after the practice at the office, many times in during my time in Strasbourg, I left almost immediately. I left immediately to go to the gym to have a 30 minutes, 45 minutes workout and lunch. And then according to the energy and the schedule, if there was nothing in the afternoon with the team, you might even take a nap and go home and then start working again in the evening. It's pretty common in our job because all the games are in the evening. So anyway, you're watching basketball, but it's not something that you need to find a way that you are effective. I think we do a lot of times work, great number of hours, but we don't really, you know, analyze how effective we are, what's the quality of our work. And that's why for me, to doing my stuff, to get the energy back with a little nap or gym afternoon gives me a lot of this energy to work maybe 8-9 o'clock in the evening and prepare tomorrow's practice and prepare the next opponent. And you need to find your own way. Same way, the way you recover. You need to know that is it, you know, by going to the do sports, walking in the park or in the nature, or is it going to be going to watch some other sports? So these are super important. You give a time for your mind that next morning you are again fresh.
We'll talk about that in the post game analysis of how to recover mentally, because this is the essential part in our job, because it's such an intense season, like you said, a wash machine, but it's a 10-month wash machine that doesn't seem to stop, you know, and the longer it goes, the more exhausted you get. That moving on to the transition offensive part, it says the name, you're transitioning. So you're transitioning from assistant coach to head coach was kind of a natural progression in with the national team. Also then when you became head coach in Strasbourg, now transitioning back into a role while you're still a head coach with the national team, but transitioning back to being an assistant coach in Bologna, there's, you know, several head coaches on a Team USA staff, for example, and they all feel comfortable with each other and they all have the mutual respect part because of that's I think that naturally comes with the job description when you hire a head coach to be an assistant coach. You know, both have to respect the position and the situation. How do you feel that your experiences from the past help you now to be a better assistant coach that you were before, maybe, and understanding maybe after being a head coach for the last years, what the head coach needs from the assistant coach in reverse of what you were before you became head coach? You know what I mean? Like what are the lessons that you've learned from being a head coach that you think that the head coach needs from you right now?
Well, of course, there's a lot, and it's just the beginning of this journey, few months. So I think I might recognize much more things, you know, during this long season with EuroLeague. But I think the support is the main thing. It's the thing that an assistant coach, in certain moments, needs to be analytical, see the big picture, giving the right things for the coach who might be stressed or tunnel vision in this job, and also that I would say that it's super important that the plate of head coach is full, and there's more and more people who's bringing in a different dishes to the table, and it's something that you need to try to cut the load from head coach so that every single thing he doesn't have to, you know, touch. You prepare as well as possible. It's like politics, that the assistants there before the big meetings need to prepare you well. At the end, he probably prepares himself super well, so it's not needed. But there's a days that you need to spend unexpected 2 hours with a meeting with some player or people in the office. You don't have the time. So the assistant needs to be ready to give you the advanced scout or ideas for the next practice. And I really like the idea also from the staff I've been working, that the assistant coach doesn't just do his job, give the analyze and edit, and I'm done my job, and now I'm done for today. Because we need also this, because sometimes you just need to break down the game and move on to the next one. But also that you kind of start to think like, what should we do? Giving the ideas. And then it's the head coach's job to decide that, no, I think we should do this, or go ahead, run this thing, or show these things to the players. But you need to propose. And head coach has only this 24 hours. And as I said, you know, in this job, every game changes your tomorrow schedule. So the assistants needs to help with the load.
Yeah, and on top of that, I think that you, while you're getting to know the head coach that you're working for, it's also very important to know the timing of when to say what and when to propose something, when to give ideas. And, you know, you have to know when not to say something also. You know, when there are certain things that the filtering process, when you talk to the players, and then some things you have to say to the coach, sometimes you cannot say to the coach at all. But then also the timing is very important of when to say what. You know, after a game and the heated loss, you're not going to bring up a topic that's not what's important right now. You have to be really aware of when to say what and then how to say it.
Exactly. And of course, you can anticipate when you know each other's better that probably Coach Henrik will tomorrow want to know these things about the opponent or wants to do. So I think that's also important. It gives you a lot of energy during the long weeks and days that a head coach doesn't have to point everything. That tomorrow at this time we do that, you already know, you're one step ahead. And also, like, I think that's the best thing when you work in a coaching staff, that there's a positive energy and of a flow, and assistants has a super important job for that.
And the same thing as we are at the half court already, in the half court topic, the communication part is important for me, as you say, as I'm saying right now, with the communication with the head coach, but also the communication with the players. And for me, it's more important of how the assistant coach is responsible or finds the niche of how to handle conflict and how to take the air out of the conflict, you know, because some players will be frustrated and the coach will naturally see that. He will get frustrated with that, with the frustration of the player, and then it's a trickle-down effect, and then the whole team, it can, you know, the assistant coach can sometimes help. I saw it the other day in a game where I was visiting this a couple of weeks ago, where the assistant coach comes up to the player at the end of a bench and talks to him a little bit. How do you see, which situations do you feel comfortable that you feel like this is the time to approach the player, this is not when I should approach him? Do you have situations that you feel like that are signals to you of when it's a good time to approach a player?
Well, I think this, you need to have a nose for the moment. This is you need to know the player also, how the player is, because some of the players, they need this immediately. It can be that they've been wondering in the last few days about the bad performance or what happened in the game, and also some of the players watch tons of film and they know everything already, so you don't have to go with your 200 clips. You can just open the conversation and what happened or why did it work. On the meanwhile, some players you should give a time. That it's that they process, and I think there's not a wrong one way. Also, I think this is, as you said, very important, because there's so many pieces, especially when you in a national team or here in EuroLeague, you rotate a lot. Some players, they don't play this game, they don't play that game, and so there's a lot of, you know, feeling to touch, to give information, to push them a little bit ahead, to correct one thing. Is it the ball screen defense? Is it, you know, running the offensive spacing, so that, you know, you can do it by few clips, micromanagement during your time in the airport. And it might affect to his next sub it might affect the lineup's performance on next Sunday's game. And if you can find those, it can be very, very helpful for the team. But same time, if you always go after every game with the same number of clips pushing, it doesn't work like that. Also, the players has a huge load. But then, as I said, you need to know how the player is and how does he prepare himself and how does he see the game.
It's also different when it's a veteran player or a rookie player. You know, some veteran players, they just need one clip to understand that, or just to see, to confirm their feeling or their idea, you know. And sometimes with rookies or with younger players, you need a little bit more time of making them understand the certain direction that you want their game to be going to.
I honestly think that when I go to talk, especially the experienced players, I go there to learn. I go there to ask questions, what happened or how did you see here or what's the thing in this 5 minutes period? And then you listen. And yeah, that's again the same story that they know already the game. They've been there before and they might give you even the information that we didn't think about. Of course, then there's situations that you need to give them. Especially, you know, when they play a big minutes, they might not remember everything or see something. So you need to give them a feedback, but also listen to them and develop the process that way.
Yeah, for sure. It takes a lot of character for you to feel secure and to feel comfortable approaching or asking the player for information. You know, because it's also a trusting that the player is not gonna look at you in a different way, but he's going to respect the fact that you came up to him and ask him for his opinion.
That's something, you know, in these small meetings between the player and coach, but I think that should be the thing between the group. I always say in the beginning of the season, day one, things are that I hate monologue. I prefer dialogue. And that's everywhere where we at. Of course, in some moments, like I said before, everybody cannot open their mouth and give the opinion. Some moments, coaches are leading the thing or captaining with the team. But for example, when we have the video, we watch the opponent team, the players, they know. Unfortunately, whatever we think as a coaches that we study, the players, they know better. If they know, if they have played tens of times the player already, they have the feeling. So why would we only tell our opinion? Why wouldn't they ask, like, what do you think? Or is it correct? And then the player says that, yeah, he will never, ever in this situation drive to the left. So that's also some sharing responsibilities and making the everybody feel important there. And again, get the maximum potential even bigger.
Yes, and it's also, it gives them some ownership and also makes them, when you take their idea or you listen to them, it can also trigger a little bit of a pride effect that they're going to prove you that they're right, you know, in a sense on the court.
Yeah, and there's situations that you do it with the game plan. We are in the situation that we are in the mix, and honestly, I think young or older coach, but I have learned that the, you know, coach needs to be able to say that I don't know and I'm not sure. I have an idea, but if you guys believe that we can do it this way and everybody agree, we do it that way. But then it's also, as you said, you share ownership that we decided. It was not Coach Lazio, Coach Benas who said that now we have to do it that way. Yeah, but coach said like that. No. If we decide together, it's even stronger. And I said, you know, how could I as a young coach know, you know, everything and have always the perfect opinion? I think we're lying to ourselves if we even think about that.
Absolutely. Has your expectation from the assistant coaches to your assistant coaches changed from now being an assistant coach again or having experienced the head coaching part in two different scenarios that you feel like you have a different expectation from the assistant coaches than you used to have?
I don't know expectations. I'm been very happy with how we work together. But of course, you get ideas every day. That's great with Coach Luca here that he's sharing a lot. We talk and I'm still the same young kid as 20 years before that I'm asking a lot of stupid questions and he always answers. So I think it's important that you pick up, like, I would like to have this thing. If I need to do something for him or I prepare, I'm thinking that this could help me and my staff if my assistants would do the same way. So coaching is a lot about copying. It's not only about plays or drills. It's about copying that he did it right way. I want to do it same way, or this could work for us. And for sure, there's a lot of things. But on the other hand, we've been building something, and this is not our staff right now. I said, like, I still think that this staff who goes February in the window to play Serbia and Denmark is a staff we started 2010 when I stepped in. It's just, you know, different persons, but basically it's, you know, just people are different in the different roles, but it's a Finnish national team coaching staff.
Yes. Yeah. Do you just shortly touch on the half court part on the X's and O's? Do you have a favorite action that's underrated for you? That says something. I mean, I'm not trying to get something out of you that I can use against you or anything, but in terms of underrated actions that you feel like are not explored, I'll tell you what I think is my underrated action that I feel that if players have a sense for that and coaches see situations when to do it, I think cutting and movement without the ball is extremely important. And that's why I was going to talk to you about that, because I think with the Finnish national team in the years past, it's always been the ball movement and the cutting. And I think that's the most underrated part of the game that you guys utilized to the max. And it's very difficult to guard. It's very difficult to get your players dialed in for those actions and the movements off the ball. But it's also a very, very, if you have to also the personnel, it's a very creative weapon that you can use in different half-court situations.
Well, you get the point. I'm a big fan of this, and I'm all the time studying. I like to watch the games or the actions, like why this worked or why it did, you know, play kind of a game against yourself, like, or how would I play defense on this, and why, if I play defense like that, what is the answer? You kind of play inside your head. But for sure, if you ask me one topic, it's off-ball movement, cutting. Not only cutting to receive the ball. I use the term a sacrifice cut. You know, somebody dives in to collect two defenders to get or runs the cut to the last defender on the weak side so that the shooter is open. And when you see sometimes the teams that even the best shooters are doing it at the end of the possession because they read that if I now cut, somebody's totally open, he should get an assist. That's for me an assist because he makes this cut to get somebody open. So not only cutting to the rim to receive the basketball, making a cut to make the defense collapse and get somebody open, or a closeout which creates another ball flow. So automatically it doesn't mean that it gives you the basket something happens immediately, but this is a trigger which helps you a lot, and even more right now with the size we have with the modern basketball. We talk about these wingspans and everything, that playing static, making bounce passes half court 5-on-5 without moving, that starts to be super complicated, and you got to mobilize the defense and move them side to side before you are able to get open looks.
I absolutely agree. It's spacing. That's the spacing part that it's so hard to achieve in Europe because everything is so congested. And I think that's only able to, you're only able to create space and create situations and space for the players to attack by moving the defense side to side, by creating cuts that draws attention away. It's kind of like a decoy cut. And creating more open space, whether it's on a strong side or a weak side, for the player with the ball to take advantage of it. And those things, I love to see when teams utilize that. Do you have a team or a coach that you used to watch that did it very, very well, or certain players that drew your attention in with that action?
Well, I need to say that there's a lot of good players off the ball. I was lucky. When I was in Strasbourg, I need to give a credit that Coach Collet was extremely interested about the same topic. It was the thing we talk a lot in Finnish national team to create open threes. Honestly, like this is still the main topic. And going not into the specifics, since hopefully we play with Lithuania and Finland very soon, but the most important cut for me is the 28 meters cut. It's the cut after the defensive rebound or basket from baseline to baseline, because that cut in a modern basketball opens basically the floor for the others. So it doesn't have to be one speed cut. It can be the shooter filling the corner. It can be the big man only, you know, ahead running the touchdown rim run, or it can be the trailer who dives and fills the paint, and then somebody else is able to drive. And that starts everything, because, you know, our style, and I think everybody's style is going to be sooner or later more an open court game. You want to run the floor. Everybody can push the ball 1-5 from the rebound. So you get a space and use the maximum, you know, all the court. And that's why the 28 meters cut is the main one. But answering for your question, when Coach Collet ran those, some of the actions in Strasbourg, and we had Paul Lacombe, who's now back in Strasbourg, I think I clip every single cut of him and studied that, what is the timing, and learned that, you know, how well he used the baseline. When the defender turned his head, he was walking behind him, and when the defender looked at where is my guy, he was already on the other side. But it was never like one speed, full speed. It's always like sneaking behind the defender's back or front. And I have a lot of clips still in my Synergy.
All right, there's a good trigger word for the halftime and to transition into ProBallers.com segment. And I will share my screen for you. To you, and just for you to see and to help me. We're gonna do a search, and I hope you see my screen here. Is it visible?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna search your team, Finland, your national team, and we're gonna go. All right, this is a support-free content. Ad blocker didn't work. And now we're going to go into team records. And instead of a box score, I think maybe this is going to be more fun. We're going to have the most efficient games here, sorted by the most efficient game against Cape Verde this last summer. Then also Albania 2012. Now, I was going to, you said you like the cuts. This is, you know, it goes way back. It goes to 2011. I think I've seen another statistic from 2009. So you've been to 2010. So you've seen all of these games. You've been a part of it. There's pretty good variety of games we have to choose from. Now I'm going to test you. And you said you'd like to have cuts to create open three-pointers. And now let's go into most three-point shots made. Can you tell me, or do you have a feeling of which game it was and against whom?
Wow. I think one of the most important one was for sure against Slovenia in the last game in Ljubljana, but the right number, because honestly, with Finland, some games we've been shooting the lights off with 15, 16, 17 threes. Let's see. But that's something that I remember, that we knocked down many threes, but honestly...
What's the most threes that Finland knocked down?
I don't know, Slovenia in 2013.
But how many made shots?
Oh, wow. put me in this, I would say like 16. Oh, wow.
17. But Slovenia was one of them. Slovenia was 17 in 2013. Poland... was last year's the most recent one, 17, last year in Eurobasket. And that was
this is of course like the game I should have remembered, but honestly, like those games when the flow, for example, Slovenia game in Ljubljana, or Poland game when everything goes well, I know that's so fun to watch. I think we all stopped scouting. We just, you know, sit on the bench and watch when the players were doing their thing, and that's of course the the strength, and it's also a long progress. Like you see that, you know, identity has been built from a long time ago, that we're looking for these open threes, and many players are having the will that they can also take the open three in the transition, because it's a good shot for us.
Yeah, it's sometimes, like you said, it's art, and it's art you just like to sit down and enjoy and watch them do the art on the court. Is there one thing besides the 3-point making 17 out of 38? Is there one thing that you, after games like this, you like to look for still? And you know, obviously the assists probably are interesting to see combined with the 3 points made. But is there something you pay attention to after a game like that specifically?
I think you need to. It depends on your team. Of course, in Finland, assists are one of the things. We were still top five in the World Cup of assists, even though we had more losses than wins. So that's something that we need to analyze. If we have assists, it means that we've been sharing the ball and we have been using our flow of our offense. We don't create a lot of pull-ups one-on-one. So if we don't have assists, you know, that's a bad signal. Then, for example, I think you need to analyze your team. It's not in Finland. It's easy because we built the program and the kind of the identity a long time in the club team. You need to know your quality factors. For me, for example, in Strasbourg, the team we had those few years, super important was offensive rebounding, because we were putting a lot of pressure on offensive rebounding. And the same time activity, for example, the turnovers of the opponent team. Offensive rebounding for Finland in some games, it's also important. But if you, of course, make a 16-17 threes, you will not have a lot of offensive rebounds, make a lot of shots. But like, you need to know your team, what you expect. And those numbers usually gives you also simple things to follow during the long season, that if you have your quality factor on the positive, usually you play for the win.
Yeah, so to summarize, your assists, your offensive rebounds, and the opponent's turnovers.
Those were, for example, the main ones for me in the Strasbourg time. And not also, of course, the balance of the threes and twos is something that here you see, like when you have a night like this, you have almost 40 threes, but it's not always like the number of threes. It's the how many good shots we get, and then you go deeper into the analyze, not only by numbers, by the video.
Yeah, how the quality of the shots is important, and how the quality of the three pointers, are they open, were they contested, did we create shots significantly better than in the past? The assists, are those real assists? Are those fake assists? You know, there's a lot of nuances I think you can dive into, but that paints a picture. All right, let's get back to the real work here. We move into transition defense after a short halftime break, and the transition defense is more about your, as you already touched on, the decompression part, the mental part, that after having dual roles in the basketball world, but also finding time to decompress. What do you specifically do to defend transition defense? I'm trying to be creative here, to defend your mental health and to have a little bit of awareness of when you need a break. When do you know you're pushing yourself too much?
Good question. I usually, one of the things, I need to take care of my health. I need to do sports every day. Not every day, but honestly, if I skip 2-3 days or it's not possible during the schedule, I get stressed. I get stressed not because I'm not in a good shape. I get stressed because I haven't been able to do sports. So that's something that releases my stress, and I need to do it. It's better to do even 20 minutes in the hotel room just before the game than nothing. So even though it's not a very effective workout, it's better to do. Then some things I always drop into my calendar. I really like to walk in the city take my laptop, sit in the coffee bar or sometimes a sports bar, to look people around if there's a soccer game, to eat something, grab one beer, maybe suddenly open your laptop and start to work your opponent and do the work same time. But it's like, I think I'm more creative. I'm having a better ideas when I'm moving, when I'm walking, when I'm seeing other people around me. So for example, in the hotels, it's better for me to work in the lobby than work alone in the hotel room. And that's super important that, as I said, it's not that, you know, everybody can do it. But for me, I need to know how I get the best quality. And then, of course, when it's possible, when you have a day off or afternoon practice here, I like to have one morning without an alarm. It can be that you wake up still 7:30, 8 o'clock, but like that you have a mindset that I don't have to wake up. If I want to sleep a little bit later, tomorrow is the day, and then you are having a better energy for the work.
My kind of guy. Coffee bars, going into the lobby to work. This is we're very similar in that regard, because I have to have a dynamic around me to have some sort of not inspiration, but you do need to be inspired to do some of the work, because there's sometimes it's just the monotony of it gets to you, and the monotony of sitting in the hotel room. I'm by myself a lot, and I used to be by myself a lot in Moscow when I was there working. That's why I think I picked up my habit of going to cafes, going to the mall, and just seeing people, just being around, just having some sort of dynamic around you that you feel like you're not living in a bunker, but you are actually having, there's people with a life out there that you also can have a little bit of an energy exchange. And that happens a lot in cafes. That happens sometimes when there's a good cafe with a good vibe, good coffee, and you have a good set of relaxation. But then also, like you said, you can get inspired to do some work. And to me, sometimes, a lot of times, when work can be also serving as a meditation, as hypocritical as it sounds, you know, I'm trying to see how we can decompress here. But then in order to decompress, sometimes I work a little bit, something lighter, on a lighter side. And I agree with the workout, because Joe Rogan a lot of times said also, and he hasn't talked about it in a while, so I forgot the word he used to say, but I was like, there's a certain threshold we as humans have to exhaust each day in terms of energy to get the anxiety out of your system, because it builds up. And we, as our ancestors, when we were hunters and gatherers, they're used to going out there and exhausting energy and exerting energy and hunting and running and doing. And our bodies now are very much used to sitting, you know, in the gym, in the practices, you move around a little bit, but we are more sitting now than moving. And if we don't get this energy out, some sort of threshold that everybody needs to reach, you know, everybody's threshold is different, then I think stress can keep building up, and it's internally, I think it can lead to exhaustion and implosion maybe.
Absolutely. And I think like you said, our job is a lot of something that it's a baby life. Somebody sends you the schedule or put it on the wall that this is the breakfast time, this time the bus leaves, here is the practice time, we play, we wake up, we play, we eat, we take a nap, we play again. And so sometimes you need something that you just walk, you're out of the bubble, and at the end, you know, it gives you the energy to be creative, to get some new ideas, and at least it works for me.
And that's why our job, our day-to-day has to be fun, you know, otherwise you can get crazy. That's why I think the staff is important, the people you work with are important, because you have to make it fun. It has to be fun to be around each other.
Absolutely.
So our time is slowly winding down. One, before we go into the ATOs, I want to have one post-game question for you that I had a couple of prepared, but we kept talking, and it's a good conversation. It's a great conversation, actually, because there's a lot of philosophical nuggets, I think, for the people to take away. The post-game part would be also a philosophical question. If you reflect now on your career, a young career, you're just starting off basically as a head coach, what kind of what kind of coach did you imagine becoming before you became head coach? And what kind of coach did you become as a head coach, you know, with the national team? So the question is more about, you know, for coaches who are imagining to be in one way, a certain way as a head coach, and then they become a head coach and maybe they become totally somebody different that they thought they could become. You think that's something that you went through in your head before you became a head coach?
I think I'm slowly learning what I want to be as then a more experienced coach. But for sure, when you are young and I think nowadays this Twitter and everything gives you even more possibilities to dive into the X's and O's, and it's super important in our job to have this knowledge and develop that part of the game. But for sure, I was thinking the first years that I can do this amazing playbook and run these plays and do the stuff with Coach Detman. I pretty quickly learned about the leadership, how to treat the people, that how super important it is, and I start to think and develop myself on that an aspect. But I honestly think that I remember that the players remember when they have been in the team where I have been assistant or coach, that coach was always there to help and also to teach. And teaching is so many ways. It doesn't have to be to teach to use the cross screen or as said, you know, how to space out on the weak side, but to teach every day, like life, how to be together, how to be as a group. And same time, like, teach to enjoy the, as you said, because, like, that's at the end of the day, the things you remember from your best teams and those years you had fun that, you know, the coach was supporting, helping, teaching you so many ways.
Perfect. All right. You ready for the ATOs?
Hopefully. Can I use my assistant to draw?
You can use anybody. You can call on a joker if you want to, and then maybe we can phone somebody in who wants to be a millionaire. All right. Most frequent question you ask yourself after a game to analyze a win or a loss. If there's one question you ask yourself every game, which would it be?
I was thinking about this earlier, this thing, and actually, like, I think one of the most common question comes afterwards, not right after the game, like, let's say day after or in the evening, like, that was the preparation good? And this is not about the tactic I wrote down in the paper or we did as a staff, or preparation was, were mentally ready, physically ready, so everything before the game good, so that the players can perform well, because this works also in the practices. Before I usually like to go watch, especially the bad practices, when you don't feel, you know, that we get going or the drill doesn't go. Was it prepared well? Was the drill right? Did you explain it well? Were the players ready to run it before saying that they cannot do something? So self-criticizing, I think that's something I always do and ask first before jumping into the what happened on the floor, that, you know, was my job well done and prepared, and were the players able to perform?
If you had a chance for a 60-second phone call, past or present, who would you call right now, and what would you say?
That's a super good question. This is a basketball related.
Anybody.
No, I honestly think that if I think basketball, reading the books, many of us would call John Wooden to ask a few questions, and or not ask anything, giving 60 seconds for him to talk and say the things. But honestly, there is a person who passed away a little time ago, If it would be possible to call him and thank, that's the person who gave me my first job, who was the coach and president in Lappeenranta. And I would probably thank him and say that hopefully he's proud over there to watch that. It's been quite a nice journey.
That's great. Worst advice you've received as a coach?
Worst. I was yeah. First. This goes on. Worst as I receive as a coach. I don't know. Worst advice. I would turn it always positive way. You know me, Benna. So I would say that the most important one is to be humble.
Okay, that's the best advice. That was my next question. Best personal investment.
I think in this calendar, the investment, I need to honestly say that all the time I give to my close ones, because this is the investment that, you know, they deserve, and it helps you. On the long term, I need to say that when you're moving from city to city, from apartment to apartment, it's better to have a good bed. Because this is something that, you know, when it's not good, you know, it will cost you tons of problems. And whatever is our, you know, working hours and routines, if you don't rest well, it will cost you a back pain and a headache, and also a headache for the others. So if you cannot invest time for your close ones enough, at least buy a good bed.
What do you think most coaches misunderstand about the profession, especially young coaches, I would say? What do you think is the most misunderstood part of this profession?
Misunderstood. I think we need to understand that it's, at the end, it's me and you thing all the time. Coaching is, you know, this kind of a leadership between you and the player, between you and your colleagues, between you and the people at the office every day, between you and the fan, and also that we are here to help players, because without them doing well and trusting you and feeling that, you know, people are supporting them, you ain't going to be successful.
And the most popular question on this podcast that I ask everybody at the end of it, not everybody, almost everybody I did ask it, is the Tim Ferriss question: is your favorite failure from your career, the one failure that you learned the most from in the past that you kind of cherish, you know? It was a failure. It was something that hurt, but it's something that you learned the most from.
There's so many, and probably the biggest ones are ahead. So unfortunately, they will come. I think when you go back to the failing and the situations, like you didn't trust people around you. You were thinking that me, I can do it. I'm able to do this. And that's also your strength in certain situations, that you push yourself. But in the meanwhile, many times this kind of a mentality hurts you more than gives. So being able to look around and who's there and work together.
Lassi, grazie mille. Grazie.
Greco. Ole hyvä.
Thank you very much once again, and welcome to the podcast club. Welcome to my role, to my role.
Finally, it was a pleasure and a great talk. Next time we have a good coffee, right?
Yes, we'll find a good cafe, great cafe, wherever we are. All right, my friend. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and talk soon. See you.